KMPL.ca virtual newsroom for this week. Marty Thompson and Charlie O'Connor Clark. If you're watching this on KMPL.ca, go ahead and subscribe on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, whatever they call it now, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts. Because this is a big episode, for one, Charlie. This is a big deal. We have a date for the 2021. You heard the trepidation, my boys. For the 2021 CPL season, Commissioner David Klanikin coming out, I believe, on Monday or Tuesday this week. I think it was Tuesday. To say they're eyeing a start date for Victoria Day. So around May 22nd-ish. May 2-4, as it's commonly known. I mean, like, I'm not sure how long we're going to stay on this, Charlie, but it's just good to have a date. Like, I think that's really what everyone's come down to, and everyone understands, and even in Klanikin's statement, it's like, we don't know. We don't know what could happen with COVID-19, with restrictions, whatever, and I think people understand that. It's just good to have something to look forward to, right, ultimately?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the first thing it probably stresses is that, obviously, a lot of this is out of the league's hands. Mm-hmm. And it's going to depend a lot on what we're allowed to do based on restrictions and so on and so forth across the country. But it's nice to have at least some idea. I mean, now when we talk about the 2021 season, we're not talking about some nebulous entity that's at some point somewhere in some form. Now we at least know that the hope is to have a normal length season starting at a pretty solid time in around May, which isn't too far off when a season would normally start. And I think the one thing that maybe is important to mention here is that this also helps clubs a lot in terms of building their rosters. If you're trying to sign players, for example, you want to be able to tell a guy, we are hopefully going to be able to start our season in May, not we're just hopeful to have a season. Right. Mm-hmm. So I think in that sense, and in terms of coaches, maybe making training plans, I don't know how many months out from now May is. Is that 5 months, 4 months ish?
Yeah.
It's the end of January. 4 months. Yeah. You can maybe start to work around that sort of thing. I'm not a coach or a personal trainer or anything. I don't know how far in advance you would make these plans, but it's just something to work with. Right. And it's something to go on. And I think, more than anything, that's the important thing.
I'm glad you brought that up, Charlie, because if you talk to the right coach and the right people, you know, on the inside, so to speak, with the CPL and its clubs, like, there were a lot of players that slipped through the cracks isn't the right word, but just because of the nature of the 2020 CPL season, it just didn't work, because you'd have a good player pop up, like, let's say in May, who's available, and you say, yeah, no, we'd like to have you, but we don't know when we're going to start. And yeah. I think that would be important. Even like you said, it's a soft date, but it should help, and it should help decide, like, frankly, when preseason is. We know that there's some players here and there trying to train, obviously where it's legal, I suppose. But like hopefully we get to see a little bit of that maybe in like March or April. Like imagine they're training April 15th. My God.
Oh, I hope so. That would be amazing.
So 28 game season is the goal, which is, you know, a full season. And I think by the time this thing kicks off, it'll wrap up probably about November, we'd have to say, at the latest. So that's like around 150 days. It looks pretty tight from the sense that there may have to be a stoppage for something like the Gold Cup this year. You know, we'll have to factor that in when it comes out. But I'm curious how condensed the schedule will be. Because and maybe to compare to 2020 quickly, you know, we remember when that schedule came out, a schedule that never happened, of course, the games never were played. But in the summer, they were doing pretty often 2 games a week to try to get in those Wednesday night games. You know, that was obviously a better sell for people in the city. But I'm curious just how this schedule will shake out, and how, if it'll be maybe a little bit more condensed, maybe it'll end up actually sort of reducing that game amount. I'm not sure.
Yeah. And the other thing we don't know yet is if there's going to be a normal Canadian championship maybe to think about in the summer, which adds even more games. And as you mentioned, does the Gold Cup, which, I mean, knock on wood, hopefully some CPLers will be at as well. So it's definitely going to be a busy summer for soccer, hopefully. But I don't know. I mean, I think the goal would be to just have at least a season that's long enough that you can maybe make some judgments off it. Because I think any player or coach in the league that we've asked so far has been like, yeah, you can't really make massive judgments about the seven games that we played on any individual player, really.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Yeah, we're going to be sitting on May 2-4 out on the porch watching CPL, having a lager beer.
Fingers crossed.
Listening to like Kim Mitchell or something. I'm trying to think of like what the May 2-4 vibe should be. It's probably Kim Mitchell.
Kim Mitchell is definitely in that vibe.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, just going to play the two songs over and over again. Go for a soda. I want to hear Go for a Soda again, please. Okay, the other big announcement on Tuesday this week, the new under 21 minutes threshold. So it's only up to 1,500 minutes. We talked a little bit about this just on a special on the website, but like ironically, like this could have been a lot higher. You know what I mean? Every team got to 1,500 minutes in 2019. It was 1,000 previously. Obviously, you still need to have three under 21 players to a minimum of three under 21 players to hit that threshold. But it could have been 2,000. I think if it's 2,000, maybe teams are going to be more hard pressed to do it. But like, I mean, I don't know, 1,500 just seems manageable, right?
Yeah, and I mean, every team did get there in 2019. But Cavalry only just got there because the That's only true. Player that really was getting minutes under 21 was Malik Hamilton. I think every year you're going to have teams that just absolutely smash the mark. I mean, in the first year with Pacific and this past year, I guess it was Valor, and it looks like it might be York United this season based on the roster they're building. But it's a significant number that I think will register a little bit more on the radar than the 1,000. And I think if you were to start going way too high with the numbers, then you're just not going to be able to have as many experienced players, which is going to hurt the development of the younger players to begin with, which is kind of the point of it all. But it is going to make teams consider their under 21 players more while building their roster. I think we already mentioned this when we talked about it before, but if you need 1,500 minutes from a group of players, you're going to want to make sure that you're comfortable putting them out there to start games every couple weeks or so, at least. So they're going to want to be good players, like not just guys that are maybe a project. So you'll be a little bit more selective maybe with the guys that you're bringing on. And obviously, since guys are going to age out every year, you're going to be continuously replenishing your group of under 21 guys, right? Because guys will get old, guys will age out. And I think that maybe does help push the CPL as a whole a little bit more towards becoming more of a selling league, which I know a lot of clubs are kind of interested in. So if you're maybe taking on a guy at 17 or 18 years old, and you play him as your under 21 player for a couple of years, and hopefully the idea would be by the time you get to 22 years old or so, he's ready to move on and maybe be sold on so that a new young player can come in and take his place and just everybody wins, right?
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that that players have started to age out of this cohort already, and it's really putting pressure on teams. Like, just quickly going over the rosters this morning, York, I think, has like five or six players. They're good. Edmonton's got their three. Halifax would have their three, I think, if they bring back Scott Firth and Jake Ruby, who got training camp invites. Other than that, like, I don't think Ottawa has anyone. I could be wrong. Like Forge, Valor. I think Cavalry has Jose Hernandez if he still qualifies. Like, there's a lot of even Pacific. I think Pacific has Sean Young and maybe her job rapport still counts. So there's going to be a lot of action in the next couple months to try to find these young players, and probably locally to help fill these gaps, which, I mean, like you sort of already alluded to, Charlie, like that's the most interesting part is what kind of players do you want to invest in that you know can pan out? I don't know. It's going to be interesting, especially for a team like Forge. Like Forge, I'm so interested to see what's going to happen with their roster. Obviously, Daniel Krutzen out on trial right now in Sweden. We'll get an update on that, whether or not he moves on, I'm sure, in the coming week. But yeah, that's going to be interesting for those teams to get young players.
Yeah, I mean, Forge obviously is going to be an interesting roster project this offseason, just in general. I mean, if they do end up having to replace the best center back pairing in a league, then already they're starting in a hole.
I'm a bit worried. I'm a bit worried.
A little bit. And I think Forge fans and staff might be a little annoyed at us if we said that, but I don't know, man.
Well, I think we'll take a quick aside here for Forge. Why not? I'm just worried about like the David Edgar role. And this was something that we've talked about at length, I think even in our roundup for the season, but you know, think about back to 2019 around August when he was brought in to replace Emery Welshman and how different that team looked. And how they basically, like, they didn't cruise, but through the regular season, they looked so much better defensively. And he's played a ton of minutes since then, you know, almost every minute for Forge since then. So I don't know. I feel like that's a big hole. But yeah, cruising on loan to a first division team in Sweden, that's the thing. He might be good enough to go there. Who knows? Like, I don't know. It's tough. It's tough defensively because, yeah, you wonder where you can get a center back, two center backs that were objectively two of the maybe top three or four in the league last year.
Yeah, and there's no heir apparent to these guys. Like, there's no, certainly no Canadian national team player legend that I can think of that is going to be the next kind of coup to come in and
fill
David
Edgar's
shoes.
Yeah, like David Edgar objectively, and you know, we knew that he was sort of sniffing around the CPL before the league started, but like, yeah, objectively, he was probably like the number one Canadian men's national team player to sign.
Probably, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like at that point in that pool, you would have said, oh yeah, he's probably the one that, they're probably the one that would be the most successful.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well,
but I mean,
no, go ahead. Sorry.
We've asked questions like this to Bobby so many times before, usually in the context of Tristan Borges and Kyle Becker. Are they going to move on? Can you replace your best players? And he's always been like, we want to lose our best players, right?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe not to retirement necessarily, but if a guy like Daniel Crutzen does move on because he's shown that he's so good in the CPL that he's good enough to play in the Swedish top flight, then yeah, that's awesome for Forge for sure. But it's a difficult position to replace, especially if so much of your game is built around kind of playing out of the back and moving the ball side to side across the back four and the way that Forge has played. So it'll be a very interesting project, I think.
Moving the ball as well as Daniel Crutzen done. We should say that we don't have any sort of roster news out of Forge yet. No. Excuse me, for the season. So that'll be interesting to come down in the next probably month. Probably in February we'll get a series of announcements, or who knows, maybe even earlier. So the other big announcement this week was the CPL U Sports Draft. We have a date. It's Friday. That's right, a week from today. If you're listening on the day this podcast comes out, Friday afternoon, in fact, we've got the rundown, or I should say the order. Pretty straightforward. Obviously, FC Edmonton picking first with Alan Kosh. Like. Let's start there maybe with Edmonton, because it will be, I'm intrigued to see how he'll go with this, because he's got a background in university sport. He puts a lot of emphasis on those players. Like we know that even historically. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, who's in the pool? Like who's in the draft pool that you think would be maybe worthy of a number one pick?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to pick out names and be like, that's the guy, partly because there wasn't a U Sports championship this year that we were able to watch. There's names that will stand out, obviously, to anybody looking at the list. I mean, most of them are brothers of bigger names. There's a Reggie Larea from York University. There's a Nicholas Osorio at U of T. I think Mele Temgia's brother is in a draft
from
Sherbrooke.
Didn't know he had a brother. That's so good.
Either.
He's been such a good CPLer. Why not take a chance? And why not bring him to Edmonton? Alan,
I mean, it would be really cool. It would be the second pair of brothers, I think, that FC Edmonton has had in their CPL.
Crazy. Time. That would be amazing.
And there's guys that are coming back into the draft that have been in the pool before. Some of them have even been drafted before, but didn't make their team for whatever reason. There was, I think, one of the most highly touted picks going into last year was Charlie Waters out of Cape Breton, who ended up going to Valor, but didn't work out, didn't make the team. He's back in the draft. There's other guys that we've kind of talked about before, like a Thomas Gardner at UBC. I don't know. Are there any names kind of standing out to you? I just think that Edmonton will probably just not pick two guys from the University of Alberta as they have every other time.
Yeah, I'm curious. Because I think there's genuine quality in the draft if you want to sort of take a risk on it. And for Edmonton, they need the quality. I still think that they need quite a bit in the roster, which you already talked about last week. I don't know. Like I saw Jackson Farmer's name get tossed around, and he makes a lot of sense to me just because he's been in sort of the CPL conversation for a while, even in the draft conversation, but was never picked because obviously he's played for Canada, you know, a Whitecaps product. He would be a good depth piece, I think, at the back for them. It's interesting to see the list of names because I just want to keep going back to Charlie Waters because that was a player that we heard a lot about. And frankly, mm-hmm. even from players within the league, we know that Charlie went on trial and didn't make at least two teams, I think. They think he's good enough. They're like, yeah, he should be in the league. And ultimately, you know, we were just talking before we went on air, Charlie, like at the U Sports National Championships last year, he was objectively better than Corey Bent. I would say he was. He was more effective. He was essentially playing as a center forward and getting dropping back and creating and had like a wicked passing range. Like it was quite impressive. And for me, I would just want to go back to those players that you know you kind of know were maybe overlooked by other teams because you can maybe sort of take a risk and see because obviously they've got talent. But yeah, I don't know. Drafting in the CPL, like we'll get into this too. Like it's. You can take it in so many different ways, right? We've seen teams just try to take local guys, some of them making them, some of them don't. Others going with, you know, the best top-level talent and seeing how it shakes out. You know, the CPL U Sports draft, what I like about it is you can be creative with how you draft.
Yeah, creativity is probably a good word for it. But we've seen a lot of different kinds of players come out of the draft. There have been some pretty impressive attackers come out of it. Like, I mean, Dylan Carrero and Zach Verhoeven and obviously Corey Bent. I don't want to count Easton Ungaro because he was drafted by Cavalry.
But oh, I'm gonna make the photo. We have a photo of Easton Ungaro in a Cavalry kit from the Dominican. I'm gonna make that the show art. I'm gonna see if I can make it the show art.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I'll post it.
But I think one thing that kind of stands out is a lot of the highest quality players are the guys that are defenders and even goalkeepers and maybe midfielders. I mean, obviously Peter Schall has come out of it. Joel Waterman, I mean, mm-hmm. he came out of U Sports and now he plays for Montreal and the Canadian national team, right?
Yep.
And obviously Christian Ochsner and Connor James have been two of the better goalkeepers to come out of the draft. So I think maybe those are positions that are a little bit easier to fill from the draft. And I mean, that's probably the case in a lot of in other university soccer drafts, like the MLS Super Draft, mm-hmm. generally you get the best value out of defenders and midfielders and so on. But I mean, if there's a guy that you really like who's a forward or a winger, then by all means, I think there's plenty of quality available.
Yeah, and it's Joel Waterman. Like, I can't stress this enough. Joel Waterman's in the Canada camp right now. He's playing for Trinity Western. Same school as Jake Ruby. Before we touch on to some other topics here, we should just quickly recap. There's a couple rule changes with the draft that's come out or adjustments, I should say. So the big one, I think, for people to know just before Friday, before the broadcast, which I think is happening around 2:30, something like that in the afternoon, there's been a new rule that allows for players to be retained by their clubs if they signed CPL development contracts. For those who don't know, if you're drafted into the CPL U Sports draft, you can sign either a professional contract or a U Sports developmental contract. If it's a developmental contract, you can go back to school. So that's how you maintain your eligibility. So an example of that is Peter Schall. Like he kept his eligibility in 2019. He went back to school and then he signed a full professional contract in 2020. He's a fully fledged Halifax Wanderer. So this year, Jake Ruby has been, his rights, so to speak, have been retained by Halifax year over year. Same with Gabriel Balbinotti for Forge. So that means that they don't need to be drafted again this year if the team wants to continue to invest in them. That's exactly what happened with Gabriel Pitar. if you remember last year. We had the fun moment of Gabriel Pitar being drafted twice. First overall pick, technically the first player to ever be associated with the CPL, because it was that 2018 CPL draft, and he gets drafted again. So that won't need to happen. The only way you can retain their rights, though, is that they have to sign one of those developmental contracts and then, you know, essentially go out the year. And then at the end of the, in August, the team can decide to retain them. So I'm trying to think of another example. Yeah, for example, like Pitar was drafted by Cavalry, but didn't play this year. Therefore, he's back up to be drafted again in 2021, technically. So that's just something to keep an eye out for. And then again, I think we'll have a full rules thing out on the website. And we've got our order as well. Edmonton, Letico Ottawa, Valor, York. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how these teams approach it, especially Ottawa, their first draft.
Their first ever.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Okay, let's quickly wrap up with, Jeremy Gagnon-Lapierre. Because I said this over the phone, Charlie, and I think you giggled, and I was like, oh, did I say that wrong?
Jeremy Gagnon-Lapierre.
Lapierre.
Lapierre.
Okay. What did I say? I said Lapierre.
Lapierre.
Lapierre. Lapierre. Signs for the Halifax Wanderers, Canadian men's national team, midfielder, left back. If you ask Ottawa Fury fans in 2019, a false nine. He can play a lot of different positions, but he's going to be doing that in Halifax this year. He played for St. Louis FC in USL this year. This is a pretty big signing, Charlie. Like he's a really talented player. He's coming at like 25. He's coming at a good age. He told me that he's going to be playing mostly at center mids. So you think about how he's going to fit in that Halifax team with Andre Rampersad. I mean, maybe Abu Sissoko comes back. Like, I don't know. I think this makes Halifax a really strong team.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see where exactly he fits in. I mean, for one thing, I think he's the only Wanderers player on the current roster with a Canadian national team cap. He's got a lot of experience. He's got a handful of games in MLS with Montreal. He's played at levels that traditionally translate well to the CPL, like the USL and the NASL. He'll be a useful player. I think maybe the way to think about it is he's a bit of an upgrade on Louis Belongoyette, who obviously has left the squad after kind of losing his place in it over the Island Games. But I think over obviously a longer season, you get more use out of say a Belongoyette, who might be your third choice central midfielder. But I don't know. I mean, it's possible that Gagnon Lapierre comes in and is a starter, like Sissoko did, which he probably is, to be honest.
I think I see him playing alongside Rampersad, Morelli in front, and then, you know, like Marshall and Bent on the wings and Garcia up top. Like I think that lineup is pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah, you're probably right. I mean, we still don't know what is going on with Sissoko yet.
Yeah.
Yep. But even if it does come back, I mean, who do you go with? Do you go with the guy that played for your team already and was really good, or do you go for the guy that has a much stronger resume and body of work? I would argue it's going to be an interesting decision, and maybe there's a way to get them all in the side. Who knows?
But even just to be able to rotate a player like that in, I think is going to be super useful for Halifax.
Yeah.
Hopefully they'll have a third center back this year, or maybe even a fourth. Who knows? Which would be nice. I'm sure that Schall and Graffard didn't want to play every single minute last year, but they did a good job. I don't know. I think he's a really good signing. And again, he's going to play center mid, not left back. Well, maybe left back, but maybe
if he has to.
And this was interesting too. He said he had this conversation with Stephen Hart. Like, the versatility that he brings is so useful in the CPL. Like, it's so useful, especially because he's coming from that. Because he's coming from a little bit more of a higher level, right? Because I'm thinking about who could play on the left. Like, we know Mateo Restrepo can play there, so maybe you don't need to sign another left back. Maybe he could end up sort of slotting over there, you know, in relief. I don't know. I think that's super useful in this league, but.
Yeah, he's a real Swiss Army knife of a player. I mean, he's good enough to play pretty much wherever you're going to want to put him in. So I don't think it's going to be an issue getting him minutes in Halifax. I mean, I'm sure that he moves around a couple times to maybe try some different things, fill in at different roles. But I think obviously he'll probably play most of his time in the middle because that's probably where he's most comfortable and probably what Halifax wanted to bring him in for. But it's nice to have a guy in your lineup that, you know, if you really need to, can play pretty much anywhere you need him to.
JGL landing with HFX. I know I'm not supposed to say HFX out loud, but, you know, it made sense there. Okay, Victoria Day, a long weekend. You're out on the porch. The CPL's on. What's playing on the stereo for you, Charlie?
What's playing? I mean, we already said Kim Mitchell.
Is there another one?
Maybe Blue Rodeo.
I feel like it's Blue Rodeo as well. Yeah. Why is May 2-4 like this thing?
I don't know. It's kind of the start of cottage season, I suppose.
I guess so, yeah.
Intensely Canadian and maybe intensely Ontarian.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I feel like this might be. And I think we've just picked two Ontario artists as well.
Damn. Yeah.
We should have picked Stan Rogers.
Sorry, everybody.
Okay, we will see you on Friday afternoon. We'll be recording a special podcast after the draft, so we'll have tons of reaction, breakdowns of the picks and who we liked. So again, that draft happening on Friday afternoon. So be sure to watch that on I believe on Twitter and then on the CPL website as well. Starting at 3 p.m. Eastern time. So make sure to catch that, and then we'll have an episode right after. Until then, take care.